I was asked this that break one question, which is an important one. I won't take much time on it. About 15 years ago, they found what they thought was a gene that set people up for being an addict. I don't know if you were exposed to that, but it was people with this gene had a 4 times greater chance of becoming an addict. What's really fascinating right now, and again, it's a lot of Gabormate stuff, but it's what you need to understand is the world of this trauma research is just exploding. There's now national childhood trauma stuff. There's adult trauma. So PTSD we've been hearing about. Now there's complex PTSD, and that's the latest. But the research did this. It said that your DNA actually changes when you're under severe trauma. So you can get a gene that will develop under severe trauma. So if you think of it in terms of coal versus a diamond. So coal and diamond are basically the same as far as their makeup, but under severe pressure, the molecules realign and out comes a diamond. And so it's like God built into nature the very thing that happens when a person goes through trauma. So that has caused that idea that you're genetically predisposed and therefore you can't help it. No, it's the still, it's the trauma piece that predisposes you.
So if you're within a family unit of 4 kids, not all the children end up being ADHD.
Exactly. That's what we're coming to right now. Well, it's, again, the trauma changes the kid. And so that can, so some addicts will say the first time they picked up a drink, they were addicted. So that's where that comes from, that thinking. I would say from my understanding of it, it's still in debate and research is happening on just where, what's this genetic piece? Is it just a trauma thing that creates the genetic or is there more there?
And
exactly.
This twin was raised in a lovely family, had all the love, support it needed. This identical twin, same DNA over here, was in a dreadful family.
Okay, so let me show you.
So it's two things.
Well, again, but there's going to, I'm going to show you in just a minute. That research is changing too.
Yes.
Because of the trauma piece. So I'll say this up front. You want to know what the greatest source of complex trauma is? Being abandoned. And what happens to a child who's adopted? In their mind, they're abandoned. And so that's the greatest source, because nothing is more painful than being abandoned. And so we're going to develop that. So let me say at this point, what we're going to get into now is the painful stuff. Okay, so the first half was the science of the brain, and it's interesting, fascinating. But now you're getting to the core stuff about what shaped who you are. And this is can be painful. So I'll let you know up front. So the research, Dr. Gabormate said in his mind, 100% of addicts have complex trauma. The research that just came out 2 years ago has refined that to say 97% have complex trauma. And I would agree with that based on my years in working with clients. So in other words, it's almost a given that if a person's an addict, they come from complex trauma. But complex trauma is a very hard thing to get your hands on. It's a slippery little fella. And so that's where a lot of my work has been, is trying to define what is it that constitutes trauma for a child. Okay, so that's what we're going to develop. So hopefully as we go through it, it'll make sense, but what you're going to see that with complex trauma, it really has 3 big profound effects on a child. Number one, it affects how a child sees themselves. So if a child is put into CFS because mom's an addict, they're abandoned, the child says it must be my fault. I must not be a good enough, lovable kid. So it shapes their self-perception. So they end up with what we call shame or very low self-esteem. Complex trauma is the shaping force in that. Secondly, it affects how they cope with stress, with life situations, with problems. And we talked briefly about that. And then it shapes how they go about relationships. What they're seeing now, and we talked about this a little bit in the first, is it does affect your mental health. But do you realize that now they're saying that diabetes, cancer, heart problems, in many cases can be traced back to childhood trauma. So the cost to the medical world in taking care of people out of complex trauma, they will develop physical health problems because of the amount of stress that they were under. So it affects your autoimmune system, it affects how your organs operate, it has a profound effect on every aspect of the person. So there I talked about in the first half, so I won't go through it again. And that's just the stuff now that they're saying is part of the mental health issues. A new kind of, 20 years ago, kids got diagnosed with ADD, then they changed it to ADHD, so attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The new buzzword or new diagnosis fad for kids is ODD. Do any of you heard of that? Oppositional defiance disorder. So it means basically the kid's a little rebel. He's a defiant, stubborn kid. And we'll explain that the SAFT because it's easily understood. Once you understand complex trauma and how kids get it, they become oppositionally defiant. And that's their way of trying to survive. Okay, just let me say again, there's much of my work has been saying, okay, how does complex trauma happen? And then how does that affect how a person lives? And so I've created a list of 50 different characteristics that come out of complex trauma. Only one of those characteristics is addiction. 49 are other things, and many of you might see yourself or your spouse or your children, so there may be elbows flying, and I will try to ignore some of that. But I want you to kind of get an understanding. So trauma we've known about for years, okay? So there's just a definition, an event that a person perceives as being both dangerous and beyond their ability to handle. So the key idea is danger, they don't feel safe, okay? Because they can't handle it, they fear they will be hurt or die or go crazy. So that's a definition of trauma. Up till a couple years ago, our focus in trauma has been one event trauma, a car accident, a rape, a wartime scare, seeing a buddy die, all of those things, one-time events. Then they began to realize there's more types of trauma than just a single event. So they called the one-time event simple trauma. It doesn't mean it's not bad, it's simple. It means simple is one. And then they go, okay, what do we call the other? Complex more than one. And that's all that means. I don't like the term complex because people go, this sounds like it's complicated or whatever. It just means ongoing environment of not being safe. And so the result of that is living constantly in an environment where you don't feel safe, you always are in fight flight mode, okay? So you're walking on eggshells, you're always on guard to make sure that nothing's gonna come at you to hurt you. All of that becomes your approach to life. So hypervigilance, always on guard. Okay, if a child is too little to fight back, which they are, if they're too little to flee or flight, they're left with a third option, which is freeze. And that is shut your emotions down. Because emotions make life painful. So try not to care. Harden your heart. Don't care about anything. Just go by whatever as your kind of your mantra in life. But just freeze everything up. Emotions are bad. Emotions get you punished. Emotions get you made fun of. Try not to be an emotion person. And so that is how that begins to happen. Now, let me take this a little bit further. So complex trauma goes on a spectrum from mild to very severe, okay? So the more severe the trauma gets, the more the brain has to try to find a way of coping. But you have to understand a couple things. The more severe it gets, so a child that is regularly physically abused, sexually abused, lives in horrendous conditions, they live on heightened mode beyond what most of us could ever understand. That is a severe trauma, wartime, every day. So they develop, so if you take the line of the greater the trauma, then you get the greater the shame. Because I must be really, really, really useless, unlovable, bad to be treated this way. Then not just shame goes up, but then the brain goes, I don't like living with this much shame. I don't like feeling like a piece of dirt. So then you get the mental health. So then the brain has to go to more severe things to try and cope with severe trauma. So you want to know what a psychopath is? I don't feel anything. I just use people. I don't love people. I use people. I have no remorse. I am totally shut down. I'm a player, a hustler. It's all about me. Where does that come out of? Severe, severe trauma. Now, the next thing, and this is a scary thing, the more severe the trauma, the harder to heal and change. So if you talk to most psychiatrists, they give zero hope for a psychopath. Because why? If they were to admit the depth of their shame that drives everything in their life, it would kill them. Because they're looking at themselves in the mirror that I feel like the worst, lowest person in the world. Who wants to face that? So they don't want help. They will just try to play everything. Everything's about manipulation. So the more severe the trauma, it gets increasingly more difficult to deal with it because you got to start with the facing the shame. Now, what Christians do is they go, God loves you, feel better. You know what that does to a lot of addicts? It makes them mad. And then they go to treatment centers, they say, look in the mirror and love yourself. Say to yourself, I love you. You know what that does to most addicts? And I've had hundreds and thousands tell me, I say it because the counselor said I had to, but I was swearing in my mind at the counselor, this is the dumbest exercise I've ever done. So you just don't quickly flip a switch and get over your shame. It is a deep, deep work that takes deep, deep healing. And so that's kind of the complex trauma overview there. So now to the question over here. What happens, and what's important to understand, is trauma is partly about the circumstances, but it's also partly about the child's perception of the circumstances. So let me give you this. About 80% of addicts were very sensitive children. That's very important. About 75% were introverted children. So they're shy and sensitive, okay? So let's say this child has three siblings who are all outgoing, and here's this sensitive child, and dad's an angry Italian. And he's yelling, and the other three kids, it's water off a duck's back. Oh, dad's just angry, that's no big deal. To the sensitive kid, this is plain scary. And so it's the same event, but the perception of the child causes that to be traumatic to them. Okay? So that is part of this whole complex trauma discussion. It's hard to put numbers on that, but it is part of that. And so that, again, is something that you need to be aware of. The other thing is, for most kids growing up in complex trauma, they thought they were in a normal family. They thought every family must be like this. And so they develop, their brain develops the sense of what normal relationships are like, about how you interact with people, how you deal with problems, and they learn by watching, and they develop what this they think is normal. And then they go to a friend's house and nobody's yelling at anybody or throwing things, and they go, you got a weird family. What's wrong with them? And all of a sudden they got to rethink their normal, or they watch some of the family TV shows like My Generation. You get Leave It to Beaver, and then Along came the Huxtables until Bill Cosby got in trouble and all of that stuff. But that was their idealized picture that this is what a perfect family looks like. Okay? So that's important to understand. Okay, let me take it one step further. I get this all the time. Isn't every family dysfunctional? And doesn't every family, every child have trauma? Okay? No. So here's what is key. So the word dys in Greek means pain. So dysfunctional family is a family in pain. So what people think is that every family is dysfunctional in that they got problems. And then the opposite of a dysfunctional family is a normal, perfect family. Nobody's perfect family, so we're all dysfunctional. No, what you have is dysfunctional versus healthy. So a dysfunctional family is this. They inflict pain and never resolve it. And they don't know how to deal with pain when it enters the family system. So pain becomes the thing that marks them. Kids swim in pain with no solution. A healthy family, the kids get pain, but the parents help them resolve it. The parents give them the tools. It's a safe, nurturing place, so it's healthy. It's not perfect. They got problems. They inflict pain once in a while, but they own it. They apologize. They change. So complex trauma comes out of dysfunction.
So with people growing up in dysfunctional families, are they scared of finding like a solution to their pain?
Yes.
They don't know how to deal with that emotion.
Exactly. So what you're going to see is that when you take complex trauma, the key defining thing is fear. So it's the fear emotion ramped up. So the child lives in fear. But what's important to understand is that a lot of it is subconscious because they've shut down their emotions. So they're trying to act all brave and tough, etc. Like they're not afraid of anything. But if you could get them to be honest for a minute, subconsciously they're full of fear. And if you analyze them, every decision they make is fear-based. And so now when it comes to recover, they have to face something new. Well, every complex trauma person hates change and hates the unknown. Because if there's change or the unknown, I could get hurt. So I want everything to stay just like it is, so they become control freaks, so that I never get hurt again. So now you're saying I have to change and enter the unknown if I'm going to get healthy? And that's not happening, buddy, because now I got to trust you, and I don't trust anybody, that this is going to work and I won't get hurt. Ain't no way. And so overcoming that fear is the hardest first step, because everything's about fear and protection. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Did you mean they become control freaks?
If I can control everybody in my life and all my circumstances, then I can make sure nothing bad ever happens to me. But basically, to be a control freak, I got to turn into God. So I got to control my kids. I got to control my environment. It's all about trying to protect myself because I'm afraid of getting hurt.
And that's why fear-based religious deliveries.
Exactly.
Righteous Christians who think they're doing the right thing and whacking sinners in the head. But I agree, God is going to make someone like you just described say.
Exactly. So that's tomorrow afternoon. So churches, so let me say this. Families of complex trauma, they may have violence, but how do you motivate a child to want to obey? In a healthy family, you love them. You set healthy boundaries. You reward them. You build intimacy so they want to do what's right. That won't work in a complex trauma family because there's anger and hate and all of that. So how do you get your kids to obey? Fear. So now you're adding fear purposely. If you don't do this, and then it's heavy-handed, harsh discipline. What is scary to me, and I was saying this to Mary Charlotte, is to look at the churches in our country today. How do they motivate Christians to obey?
Fear.
Churches have become dysfunctional families. And that's... Yes, not all churches. Not all churches, but many churches. Thank you. Because that is a fear-based thing. So let me ask you this. If you're a parent, what works best in the short run, fear or love? Fear always works best in the short run. Love works best in the long run. But if I want instant results, fear will get me the instant results. And so if you ask a parent in a complex trauma family, give up fear, start loving your kids. No way, then they won't obey me. Now I can control them with fear. And so the danger is that slides into the church, and people have to portray a concept of God as that angry, judging person as a way to keep people on the straight and narrow. And it might get instant results, but it backfires in the long run. Okay. So let's go into the degrees of trauma. Now, let me just add this part. A lot of clients will come to me when I teach on complex trauma and say, aren't you blaming my parents? And I'll say yes and no. And it's tricky because your parents, yeah, they did this. But what you have to accept as an addict is you started doing it to yourself. So you got wounded, but then you wounded yourself by your decisions in response to your parents. So I'm not trying to blame parents. I'm just trying to help addicts understand how they ended up where they are. Understand the influence.
There's also the, I really think you should not put enough importance when you're dealing with a parent that perhaps has addicted children. Guilt is a huge waste of emotion, number one, parent, and number two, that parent is a child at one point.
Exactly.
The trauma was
exactly.
Goes back
to generation. So, I was going to talk about that a bit later, but I'll talk about it now. So in Exodus 20, when God is giving the law through Moses, he says that when a parent hurts a child, it will go to the fourth or fifth generation. And that's been, sadly, in my mind, kind of spiritualized, like the parent has no options here. Your kid's just not going to turn out. When you look at that passage through complex trauma, and understand what God is really saying is this. Parents have the most power of anybody in the world to influence the next generation. If they hurt the child, that's a negative influence. If they hurt the child a lot, that child will go into survival mode, and they will carry that to the next generation and then do it to their kids and their kids. So God's point is this. Once you get bad parents who are wounding their children, it takes 4 to 5 generations to turn that ship around. And he's trying to say to parents, parents, understand the power of your influence. That's what those verses are about. Because you have so much power, you can destroy children for 4 to 5 generations. But what he does say, he said in Ezekiel, he says, I don't have the next generation turn out like I'm judging the parents for their sins and the kids just got to take it, even though they've done nothing wrong. He says, no, I don't work that way. What I'm talking about is influence of parents on children, and it can be turned around, but the children have to catch it. And the children have to start making different choices than were part of their family system. And that is so difficult that that takes generations to turn around. So God has designed the most beautiful institution called the family to perpetuate godliness if you have godly parents. But that very system, if put in the hands of people who abuse that authority and become selfish, can do more damage than anything else. And so as you look at our culture, we put more and more onus on the government to fix our problems. But what we realize is it starts in the family system. The church can have a role in that, but it goes beyond just being a spiritual problem. And one of the things that I get opposition and bothers me all the time is the church says, just teach them about Jesus and they'll be good. And I go, I'm all for that. But man, you got to teach them all the other stuff that got messed up by the bad influence so they can relearn what God's design for life was. And that is I think, part of the mission of the church, but also is what I spend my time doing. Okay, so there's four kind of types of complex trauma sources, four environments of complex trauma causes. So way back, if you're in the recovery world, about 40 years ago, they came out with ACOA, which was Adult Children of Alcoholics. And they said, it's funny that the children of alcoholic families are a little different. And then they changed it to ACOD, Adult Children of Dysfunction. And they said, children in dysfunctional families are a little bit different. And that kept developing, and now it's become complex trauma. So at that time, the whole focus was children that grew up with addicts or dysfunction where there was abuse. And so the idea of abuse was basically kind of the only understanding of trauma. And so that was physical abuse, sexual abuse, but it goes way beyond that. I ask clients all the time, what hurts more, physical abuse or emotional abuse? And 100% of the time they'll say emotional abuse hurts way more than physical abuse. And that has part of the verbal abuse is part of all of that. Being told you're a loser, a failure, you can't do anything right, etc. So that is part of that world. And then that doesn't just have to be within the family. We have another institution called the education system. And so you get the bullies there, both teachers and students. So I want to show you this. Every bully is a complex trauma child acting out. They got so much anger inside, they can't take it out on their parents, so they find somebody weaker and they take it out on. Another interesting fact, children of complex trauma abuse animals, whereas children from healthy homes don't abuse animals. And so that's sometimes the first place they vent their anger is to weaker animals, okay? So abuse, we all get that. And abuse can be very severe to mildly severe. Another part with that is the dictator parent. The family where it was dad's way or the highway. It was his rules, no compromises, no negotiation. And if you break a rule, you're going to get it. So it was a military type family. That is part of that abuse world as well. And we're going to talk about tomorrow spiritual abuse. Now, I would say probably only about 10 to 20% of the addicts I work with would have spiritual abuse. But that we think of most easily in the cult setting. So what's the cult setting? The leader of the cult is the father. It's his way or the highway. And if you don't agree with him, you're ostracized, you're punished, you're told God is angry at you. And so what they do is they twist the Bible and they bring God in as a big club to get people to obey. That spiritual abuse. You can never challenge the authority. You have to believe what he believes, and you can only show the emotions that he allows you to show. And so that is huge, but it only ends up about 20%. Okay, that's where we're coming to. Yeah. Okay, so the next one is abandonment.
Yes.
Death of a parent. So it's not that the parent wanted to abandon the child, but from the perception of the child, they were abandoned. Okay? So what abandonment does is this. I now have to face a big bad world all by myself. And I don't have the skills to do that. And it's a dangerous, scary place. So if I'm abandoned, I have to start at a very young age to live in fight flight. I'm a survivor. I don't live in a healthy way. I live to survive. So that is there. Now, here's some of the stuff that is coming out, which I find fascinating. CFS is very common and been known for a while. I have clients that have been in 40 to 50 different CFS placements growing up. Oh, in Manitoba, it's Child Family Services. Okay, so you can translate that in your mind. So put out for fostering, basically. So that is a common thing, but now it's adoption. So this is a real tricky one. So let's say a child is adopted at birth into a loving family. there's research just starting. I haven't read any of the research. So this is just my opinion, okay? From what I've witnessed as a counselor, I would say about half of the kids who've been adopted end up addicts. Because at some point, and here's what I found, and I've talked to many of them, and many of them will come in and say, I don't got any shame, I don't got any complex trauma, I had a wonderful family. Then after they've been there a while, I get talking to them, and they start to trust me. And I go, did you ever wonder, when you came into your teens, why you were adopted? And their eyes kind of light up. And they go, I wondered, why did my biological parents get rid of me? And deep down, there's this haunting question. Was it because I was no good? And they could have had the greatest environment, but they still have that haunting question. And they can, if they got a healthy family, that can help them work through that, but it will come at some point in time. The next thing that they're seeing more and more of, and it's getting talked about in research, is the effect of divorce on children. So they might still have both parents in their life, but they do feel abandoned somewhat, but that goes further than that. Part of two parents that love each other is the stability and security of their world. Their world is safe because mom and dad love each other and love them. When mom and dad are apart, their world becomes unstable, insecure, and that's the trauma part. That's there. So that is becoming a bigger thing. So now over 50% of marriages end in divorce. So you can think of just the complex trauma ripple effect that comes out of that. Okay, now we come to the more subtle ones. Neglect. I have many clients that were raised where dad made a six-figure income. They lived in a $1 million home. They were in every sport, had the best clothes, the best toys, and they end up addicts. And they come to me and go, how come? I had a great family. And I go, you had a great family as far as meeting your physical needs, but did your parents meet your emotional needs? Oh, now it hits them because they go, dad was never quite there for us. If we were crying, he'd just say, go to your room because it made him uncomfortable. If he was busy and preoccupied because he's a workaholic, he was reading the paper or working on stuff and half listening to us. And so we always felt like we were a bit of a burden, that they didn't really want to be with us. They weren't passionate about being with us. They tolerated us. That creates trauma. Because now I don't feel passionately loved. I then feel like I'm a burden. That means something's wrong with me. Because their mom and dad are passionate about other things. Way more than me, but why not me? Okay, now it goes to a subtle part. Chronic illness and mental health issues in the parents create complex trauma for a couple reasons. Number one, it's not predictable. If mom struggles with depression, someday she's there for you emotionally, someday she's in her room all day. So she's not dependable. And that becomes part of it. And then there's just an element that you don't want to burden them because they got so much to deal with. They don't need your problems. So your perception is they're not there for me. And so you don't feel safe in that world. And then many people who are raised in complex trauma now have kids, but they don't have the tools yet to parent them and teach them to be healthy. And so they just pass on the bad tools and the child picks that up. And they feel neglected. Now, one of the most subtle ones is this. Do you realize that some of the toughest addicts in the world to deal with are spoiled children? Spoiled children feel neglected. Because they go, all my physical needs were met. Mom and dad cleaned up my mess after me. Why didn't they care enough about me to set some boundaries for me? Why didn't they care enough about me to make me live with the consequences of my own bad decisions? And that causes trauma for them. And then part of that is families who are all about image. So in the community, they're the perfect family. Everybody's holding hands, smiling. Behind closed doors, it's World War III. So what the child learns is we must be screwed up that we got to act while we're out there. And so image is a huge cause of complex trauma. Because the child realizes nobody's real, you're not allowed to be real, you always have to have a mask on and be fake. So the real me must be really bad. And they develop that. Okay, the last one I developed over about 13 years ago, just out of reading and studying, but it's what are the needs God has built into us? And that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow morning. But it's when a need is not consistently met in a child, they feel a vacuum, an emptiness, and they don't feel loved. So if you take this, we all have this huge need to be accepted. So what the challenge of parenting is this: I accept you totally, big ears, buck teeth, all of that. You're a bit of a ditz, but I accept you. I don't necessarily always accept your behaviors, but I accept you. I make a distinction between your behavior and your person. What happens in complex trauma? If you do something bad, then you're bad. And so if you wrote on the wall, spilled your milk, you're a jerk. And so all of a sudden the child goes, I'm not accepted. Interesting fact, there's a higher percentage of people who are addicts who wet their bed than those who aren't addicts. And so what happens with that is now you wet your bed, you get shamed, you get made fun of, you get laughed at, you get teased, it gets talked about, and so that need of acceptance isn't there. And because of that, you don't feel safe. And so that is the most subtle, but what I want you to see, did you get her fixed for me? She's working on it. What I want you to see is this. I think the emotional abandonment stuff, neglect, needs not met, actually does even greater damage than the physical abuse. And so that is what a lot of my work has been about. Exactly.
But if it's internal abuse
and shame, exactly.
I can never say.
Exactly. So let me give you another example that I like illustrations or pictures in my mind to help me get a truth. So if you look at a child, or how do we know what we look like? We look in a mirror, okay? So a child, when it comes into the world, how does it get a picture of what they are like? Not just externally, but internally as well. They look at God mirrors, and the mirrors are mom and dad. And so it's what do mom and dad say to me, and how do they treat me? And so as a child looks into the reflection of what mom and dad reflect back to them of themselves, they start to get a picture of who they are, okay? So if mom is always neglecting them or getting angry at them, dad is always hitting them or getting drunk, they are getting mirrored back to them, something's wrong with you. Okay, so let's take this first so you understand how difficult this is for them. In Winnipeg, we have every year an exhibition where they have all the rides and all of that stuff, and then there's the House of Distorted Mirrors, okay? So let's say you're 6 feet tall and skinny, but you go into a House of Distorted Mirrors and you look in the mirror and you're 4 feet tall and 4 feet wide, okay? So picture a child in a complex trauma family. They grow up with distorted mirrors only in their family. So every day they look into the mirror of mom and dad and they're 4 feet tall and 4 feet wide. And that's every day they see that picture. It's reinforced. Let's say when they get 16, they're over at a friend's one day and they see an accurate mirror on the wall and it shows them to be 6 feet tall and skinny. What are they going to say? Something wrong with that mirror. So I ask clients all this time, and Christians, you need to be aware of this. An addict will come into the church here, and you go, oh, I like you so much. Do you want to know what the addict hears? Wonder what they want. They wouldn't say that if they really knew me. They're only saying that to be nice. So what just happened? Everybody that's an accurate mirror, they see as a distorted mirror. The only mirrors they believe are the ones that say you're useless, you're no good, you're a loser. And so they have to quit trusting the old mirrors, Believe that they're distorted and start believing these new mirrors that they don't know that they can trust, God included, that they are actually a beautiful person. Wow, that is a huge stretch for them to overcome. And so that's the just one of the challenges that you're going to face. So I think we'll just continue after lunch, and we're going to get into what does this complex trauma then do in the brain.